The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
No Wooly, no Kane, no Stevie, no Connor. Just one man and his love for this thing we call the GAA. Welcome to the GAA, brought to you by Paddy Power, with myself, Conan Doherty. Don't worry, you're not going to be stuck with me on my own the whole time. I've got not one, not two, but three interviews coming up, and we're going to dive straight into it very soon. First up, we've got Kilmacud Crooks manager Robbie Brennan ahead of their Leinster semi-final with Port Laois. We've got the other Leinster semi-final interest going on in the preview. We've got Mickey Graham from Cavan coming up. He's manager of Monolacta, and he's a new Cavan manager. And also Galway and Cora Finn wingback Kieran Malloy ahead of their Connacht final with Ballintubber. I had the misfortune of getting up close and personal with Kieran Malloy a couple of months ago in the All-Ireland Sevens, and well, to be honest, I say up close and personal, I mean, I shook his hand before the game, and then I didn't get within 10 metres of him when the game actually started. So I can confirm that Cora Finn, the All-Ireland champions, are a good team. Our friend Colin Parkinson is away creating more Parkinson's. He's delivering another baby. He's going to have a little army for himself soon down in Port Laois. He'll have more people to tell the story of that time he won the All-Ireland minor title in 1998, if you didn't know by now. He hasn't really talked about it that much on the show. But to keep with tradition and to keep with the format of the great show that he has put on for us over the last three seasons, I'll run through a very quick bit of news before we dive into the Robbie Brennan interview. Pádraic Joyce, Galway legend, one of the best footballers of all time, certainly one of the most beautiful footballers with the most beautiful left feet. He is in charge of the Galway under 20s backroom team, still to be confirmed, but that's a big appointment for Galway. Obviously he was in with the international rules with Joe Kiernan and with Dara O'Shea, so he is now in charge of the under 20s. Massive news for Galway football to have somebody like that in charge of the underage setup. Mark Hart, Mickey Hart's son, is taking over at Clonduff. The Down Championship is going to be unreal next year. So Mark Hart, along with Adrian O'Donnell, they seem to go everywhere together. They're in charge now for 2019 at Clonduff. Clonduff haven't won since 2000. And they're up against it. I must say they're up against it, because not only are Burn the new champions and a powerhouse, a historic powerhouse of Ulster football, under Paddy O'Rourke and Stephen McDonnell, our own Stephen McDonnell, but they also have Kilcoo, who had just won six in a row before Burn knocked them off their perch. And on top of that, they have bloody Mickey Moran, who had won three Ulster titles of Stocknail, now with Conliffe Gilligan, Ballanderry and Derry legend, in his first management venture. So they're in charge of Kilcoo, Burn are the champions, and now we've got Mark Hart and Adrian O'Donnell in charge of Clonduff. They have a bit of success so far. They won the Ulster Intermediate Football Championship with Pomeroy in Tyrone. They won the Fermanagh Championship in 2014, as well as the Senior League with Rosslea Shamrocks. They were in charge of Ballanderry. They didn't have success at Ballanderry, relatively. They lost by 4 points in a quarter final, but they drew Stocknail, who, you know, were going on to an All-Ulster title, so there's no shame in that. Ballanderry haven't won the Derry Championship since 2013. But yeah, so Mickey Hart's son and Adrian O'Donnell are continuing their rise, and now they're in Down, which is going to be a very interesting championship next year. Elsewhere, Micheál Donoghue back to Galway. Two more years with Galway Hurlers, of course. He's won the All-Ireland, he's won Leinster Championships, he got to the All-Ireland Final this year, so two more years up to 2020 for him. Mick Bowen, or Bohan as Willie would say, but Willie pronounces a lot of things wrong, mostly TG4 as he would say. Mick Bowen is another 2 years with the Dublin Ladies, after two All-Irelands, a league title, two Leinster Championships, so another great coup for them. And David Fitzgerald has brought another Waterford man into his backroom team in the shape of Stephen Malumphy at Wexford. So he's going to become one of the Wexford coaches. The Wexford People reporting that the Ballyduff upper club man will join David Fitzgerald's backroom team, which already includes JJ Doyle, Saoirse Bulfin and Keith Rossiter. So that's all the news. We're going to dive straight into an interview here, straight into previews. Here comes Robbie Brennan. Okay, I've got Kilmacud Crokes joint manager Robbie Brennan on the line. Robbie, everything I've read about you, it says you're an adaptable coach. You'll adapt your team to whatever the team is. You'll adapt your system to whatever the team is. Can you talk about your philosophy a little bit?
Yeah, I suppose a lot of it coming is really just see what team you have under you, I suppose, first. And I suppose being between my time in Dunboyne and then in Sylvester's and obviously now in Kilmacud, you'd have a different variable of players. So you're kind of trying to adapt to what's under your hood, I suppose. And even this year, we've had probably four or five different types of performances in the championship, given the type of team that we're facing. So ideally, you'd love to, from a philosophy point of view, get out and let them play football and let them at it. That's the first starting point. And then obviously trying to get your matchups right and tactically get it right from there. So yeah, I think nowadays you have to be adaptable. You don't know what you're going to face with different squads. So it's one of the key factors.
Would you look on and see, without hanging any fellow managers out to dry, but would you ever see some sort of extremes at both sides where they are just sort of beholden to a philosophy too much? So somebody's so defensive and they won't come out of that and then they don't win the game, and somebody's so attacking and they're naive and they get caught. Do you see that often in the game, and people should be a bit more sort of responsive to what's happened?
Yeah, you do. I think there's no doubt about that. Even this year, again, won't say who, but you'd have seen it in Dublin, seen it in Ulster already this season. And you just wonder sometimes why guys, you get that you have a certain set of beliefs you want to play to, but you've got to adapt that, particularly if it's really noticeable. And I think one particular game up the north this year, just recently, you would have seen one team just set out their stall and this is the way they play without adapting, left themselves very open to the opposition. So yeah, no, it is there. And then again, you see it, how many times a team are winning against a defensive team and they refuse to come out of their shell. And I personally don't get it. I just don't see why you can't. I understand you have to stick to your guns, but surely you've got to have a plan B to be able to come out and adapt if necessary. It just doesn't make sense.
Do you think football's moving away a bit now from, I thought personally that, a lot of defensive crazes were happening because, there might have been managers moving around and they might have been there for 2 or 3 years at a certain team and it's guaranteed them that they wouldn't get their arses handed to them, basically. So you set up defensively and you can sort of make a bit of progress fast. But do you think now people realise that to win, you have to do something else?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was a stage, as you rightly say, a few years ago, where that was definitely the case, and you'd probably coaches and managers moving from squad to squad and trying to put their stamp on it, no matter what they had, the type of players they had. But I think it's coming back a little bit. I'd like to think it is, anyway. It'll always be there, there's no doubt, but I think it's coming back around a small bit to a bit more attacking football and away from the defensive side of things.
Yeah, and tell me, obviously you got Johnny McGee in with you at Kilmacud Crokes. How important is that to have the right man around you?
Yeah, it's huge. It's predominantly a Kilmacud management team, and obviously Shane is there, Shane Smith and Paul Hussey as well. But it's brilliant. It's great for us, I mean, as clubmen, to be coming back in and have those guys around us. I mean, we know the place so well. It's in our blood, I suppose. So it's a natural fit. And yeah, we have a great management team with Johnny there as well, and Paul Griffin, Robbie Leahy, and as I say, Shane Smith doing the coaching. So we have a nice balance this year with it.
You've actually teed up my next question. Lovely. I was just going to ask you about managing your own club. Is there some sort of pressure with it? Obviously, you've managed now, I know you played with Dunboyne, but you've managed two clubs outside of Kilmacud. Is there a bit more pressure with managing your own club, or is it better? I know everyone knows you, and you know everyone, and you know their bloody parents, and your friends are some people, and you know the politics, and there's baggage. Is it a bit harder managing your own club, or easier?
I think so. I think it's probably 50-50, really. I mean, from a satisfaction point of view, when you win, it's probably the best feeling ever, particularly when the whistle went against Hughes that day. I'm not sure I felt anything like it, even as a player. So that side of it is phenomenal. I think, yeah, the other side of it, if you're living and breathing, it's like both myself and Johnny aren't living in Kilmacud anymore. Johnny's in Ashburn and I'm in Dunboyne. So we're not in the place 24/7. We're there when we train, and I suppose part of meetings you're outside of it. Dunboyne was different because you're living right there and every second person you meet wants to talk about it. Yeah. And of course, you're open to a bit more abuse, depending on how the results are going. But yeah, it's probably 50-50, to be honest with you. As I say, the joy of the winning is that much sweeter when it's your own, but a little bit more pressure, I suppose, when things aren't going well.
That abuse you talk, would you ever come across anybody and have an argument with them while you're managing a team, somebody outside the team?
Yeah, it does happen, unfortunately. And I would maybe not so much an argument, but probably more so someone trying to give you their opinion on what you should or shouldn't be doing. And as I say, when you're right in the thick of it, that happens more so than not. When you're able to go to training and drive back into Dunboyne, nobody's too worried about what you're doing out in Kilmacud, bar when we played them, obviously. But the norm is you can just get on with it then, you know. So, but yeah, there's always, you know yourself, there's always someone who has an opinion they can do it either better than you can, or you should be changing something. But look, that's the GAA, that's part and parcel. I'd say that's in every club.
Yeah, I was interested to read you talking about a bit of pressure. You know, Kilmacud hadn't won since 2010, and you were talking about pressure. Now, me as a blue-in, I just, you know, assumed that it was Vincent's and Ballymun and Ballyboden, they would be the three favourites, and then maybe Kilmacud after that. But did you feel that there was expectation to win a championship?
I think, I mean, we didn't put it on ourselves, certainly. I suppose maybe historically there might be a little bit of pressure there, or expectation that we should be doing better. I suppose off the back of, there was a lot of under-21 success and underage success, and numbers, as you know yourself, kind of are huge out in the club. So yeah, there probably is a little bit of expectation. To be fair to the committee, when they appointed us, there was no pressure put on, literally no expectations. It was just trying and build it again, maybe over a couple of 2-3 year period, and see where we could get to. So to win it the first year was great, but I wouldn't call it pressure. Maybe expectation. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the eighth one we've won, so it's not like it's the first one we've won and people were waiting for you to do it. But it probably surprised a few people that we got it done in the first year. Yeah.
Yeah, and do you think you're in a better position than a club, say, like Ballymun, who obviously have so many county men? And by my reckon, I think, is it three that you have? Is it Paul Mannion, Keane O'Sullivan and Andrew McGowan? Are they the only ones in the county panel?
Yeah, they're the three in with the seniors. And then, look, you know yourself, obviously it goes into the 20s then. And obviously Liam Flatman was just up out of the Dublin minors. So there's always guys missing. But it certainly does... I think it must have an impact on Ballymun when you've, what are they, 6-7, is it, that they have out with Dublin at times? So that obviously is an issue for them. But yeah, three is manageable. I think three is manageable. I think, I don't know how you do it with 6 or 7, because your squad is gone for the majority of the year, but three isn't too bad. Hopefully it stays at that, there's no more gone for next year.
Is it a lot easier in the fact that it's two of them are Keane O'Sullivan, where you know he's going to come in and sort of be that rock for you, and Paul Mannion's going to be that full forward for you? Is that easier sort of as well to manage? Like, everyone knows what they'll have when they come back?
Yeah, that's obviously a huge factor. The lads are so experienced. And again, they're there for whatever number, obviously Keane longer than Paul now, but Paul is at that stage where he's done it enough. And like them coming back in, it's nothing new now for them just to slip back into the system and what we're doing. And look, I've said it before a few times, kind of like, they're brilliant when they come back in around the squad. They're like, their influence is huge. And I suppose you wouldn't expect it any other way when someone as successful as they have been with Dublin coming back in, they should be able to lead like that. But they're definitely a plus when we get them back.
Mm. And can you give me a flavour of, like, the demands of your own week, Robbie? Like, just as a manager, like, you know, like, we always talk about how much players do, and especially when they're playing for different teams. But yeah, I know managers, like, there is that old saying that, like, you know, no one will ever have more training sessions than a manager, because a manager will be there at every one. But then outside of that, they're going home and they're looking at tapes. And like, what would honestly a week entail for you?
Yeah, it's busy. There's no doubt about it. Look, the key to us is, because we've got a great management team and everybody does their own little piece, which is great. You're not having to do everything. And like Shane and Paul and Robbie do the two Pauls and Robbie Lee do the majority of the coaching, and then myself and Johnny are there obviously overseeing. But yeah, the analysis stuff, so it's from Monday right through to video analysis work on Saturdays and team meetings, and you're dealing with committees and looking at panels and the movement of players up and down, and challenge matches and injuries and physios. And so look, it's non-stop. It's pretty much full on for most of the week. But look, you wouldn't have it any other way. You'd be bored without it, I'd say.
And then, like, suppose taking Port Leash as an example, I mean, will you have watched a couple of their games at least now, you know, before this weekend?
Yeah, we'd have gone through all their Leash championship matches that we have, and right through to the final, and then obviously the Moorfield game as well, and we'd look at last year's stuff. So I suppose nowadays everything is there. You can get access to all these matches. So where years ago you probably couldn't, and you're going on information and a bit of a word here from somebody about a certain player, but it's pretty much all there to be seen. No more than, I'm sure, Port Leash are looking at all our stuff. It's all up online. So You can always get access to these things. But yeah, it's important. I think you'd be foolish not to look at it and try and get as much knowledge as you possibly can about whoever the opposition may be. And we'd be doing that right the way through since the start of the season. So we just continue in the same vein.
And how's Keane O'Sullivan? He didn't play the last day.
No. He had a stag for the Dunboyne game. So, look, was it a tricky one for him? Did he cancel the stag and maybe stay for the match, or did he not? And he was carrying a slight little strain in the hamstring for that game. So, you know, when you weigh it all up, you said, look, you know, he's given so much to the county and the club. He probably felt, look, this is one he needed to do. It was his own. It was someone else's stag, obviously, would have cancelled. But his own one, he probably couldn't cancel and leave the rest of them out there in Spain having a jolly up. So, but look, he was brilliant. I mean, to get back even in time for the game, he was never going to play against Dunboyne, but it just showed where he is, his leadership, that he wanted to get back just to be there to see how it goes and again lend his influence on the day. So it was brilliant to have him even for that, you know.
And you were happy enough. I remember texting, I was going to miss a game, I was going to be away in a stag in Newcastle, and texting a manager to tell him this, and I just got a message back saying, are you for real? One of my best mates stag, like, you know. So were you happy enough? Yeah, were you as diplomatic as you put it there?
Yeah, I suppose, like, there's probably a bit of history where Johnny cancelled his own stag for a championship match, so I suppose Keane was under a little bit of pressure with that in the background. But as I say, I think the fact that he had the slight strain probably wouldn't have been risked anyway, so that made it a little bit easier to say go. But, you know, again, it's different kind of nowadays. Guys are, you know, they give so much to it that when these things happen, sometimes, you know, they do have a life outside of football as well, and they need to be able to enjoy that. And you know, what happens if you say no, you can't go? You've got an unhappy footballer then for the remainder of the season. So I think where you can do it, you should, and let them have that bit of downtime as well.
Yeah, and so, yeah, you mentioned playing Dunboyne. So you're living there, your wife from there, is that right?
Yeah, wife is there, and brother-in-law will be playing, two brother-in-laws will be playing. David obviously is still playing, yeah. So
you're playing against two brother-in-laws, and you've played for them, you've managed them, and your wife from there. I take it that was a tough week for you.
It was tricky, yeah. It was very, very tricky to build up. I didn't enjoy it. It was quite awkward, and even for the kids in school, it was a little bit tricky, you know, because my youngest had a tie, could be at all the matches for Kilmacud, but obviously played for Dunboyne, so it was a bit tricky from that side of things. But, like, you know, it was all a bit of banter. But I was glad when it was over, just to see the back of it and be able to move on to the next one. And I suppose with David playing more so than anything, is probably his last match. So to be involved in that, he's gone around three decades, and he's won three championships in three different decades. So I suppose to be around for his last game was special from a family point of view for all of us. So nice to be a part of that. Difficult for him on that losing score, I suppose, in the way maybe Dunboyne played. But as the other brother-in-law said, it's a memory that we'll have as a family for whatever number of years, and that's something we should enjoy and not be worried about. So that's the kind of approach we took to it, you know.
Yeah, who was the wife supporting, or was she just staying out of it?
Oh no, she was the Dunboyne gear all the way. Yeah, actually, we have a good photo after the Jude's game. She was back in the clubhouse with the family in Kilmacud, and a photo with herself. She would have worked for Keane O'Sullivan, so she was there in her Dunboyne top and Keane in the Kilmacud top. No, she was sticking to the parish all the way. I couldn't get her to change, but outside of that, she'd be supporting us all right.
Well, is managing in Dublin a little bit different to me? Than, like, so you've obviously done both. You played them both, like. Again, just from my point of view, I feel like there's such a positive influence from the Dublin senior team into the players. Like, you hear them talking about what Dublin are doing and what they heard, and, you know, you don't get that in Derry, really. Like, you know, if anything, you get a bit of disdain towards the senior team.
Yeah, I think there's a definite plus from that. I mean, I suppose me, they're going through a bit of a tough patch at the moment, but Andy's doing all he can to get them at the other side of that. But yeah, there's huge positives. I said earlier, like, when Keane and Paul are coming back, the influence they show is probably what's expected of them when they're in the Dublin jersey, and they bring that when they're back in the club jersey as well. And I'm sure all the guys are the same. They're obviously a brilliant, talented squad, Dublin, but from all accounts, when they come back, a bit like Cody had with the Kilkenny lads, when you go back, you're representing your club and your county, and you make sure you do it well. And the fact Dublin play a particular way, and you know, I hear people giving out, say, they're defensive at times or whatever. Maybe they're forced into that, but generally they're trying to play football the right way, and I think that's kind of breeding itself back into the club scene as well.
Yeah, and so what about like the style of play? Like, sort of, is there a difference between the counties? I saw a great interview with Paul Galvin last year when he was going back to play with Kerry, or play in Kerry after playing with Plunketts. He was basically saying that he was a different player in Dublin than he was in Kerry, and he had to adapt. Like, so is that something that you've appreciated more, like seeing that it is different in different counties?
Oh yeah, no doubt. Even I remember my own move from Kilmacud to Dunboyne at the time as a player, and I suppose I was going down and expecting Darren Fay and Marcon O'Reilly and all these guys to be, you know, right on top of you and giving you the digs and the old school stuff, but it didn't happen to that extent. You know, I think maybe just the pace of it in Dublin is slightly quicker maybe than in Meath and maybe other counties. But the physicality of it is, it's all pretty similar. Nowadays it's all pretty similar. I don't think there's any big, you know, huge, big physical side going around playing dirty like in the old days. Yeah. But yeah, there would be a difference. There's no doubt about it, yeah.
You haven't seen many games in Derry then, Robbie?
No, I missed the Derry Championship going on most years, all right, in fairness, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really joking. I love
can imagine what that's like. Yeah.
Let's just put on record, I love the Derry Championship, but...
You better say that.
I think finally I was just going to ask you about Paul Mannion, because obviously he's absolutely flying for you. I think, I don't know if it was you or Johnny were saying that he was playing on half a leg against Judes in the final, but I mean, my God, like, this man is incredible. Like, he's shown that he's one of the best forwards in Ireland, isn't he?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt. I think that was me saying he was struggling with a hamstring, and it's been at him for a few weeks, but he's pretty clear now, thank God. But yeah, he's taken that form from Dublin right back into the club. And again, that can be hard to do, you know, yourself trying to step back in from the use of playing one way with the county and maybe coming back into the club. But yeah, he's carried it through up to this, and he's absolutely flying. I mean, I think that breakaway when he went to China for the year and he came back and realised he just wasn't at the races physically compared to some of the other Dublin guys at the time, and he worked really hard in getting himself into that shape, and he's in phenomenal. Like, he's taller than most people think, you know. He's quite a big man. People just see him as a nippy kind of forward. He's not. He's big and strong and quick, and he's really accurate, you know, stepping up. Obviously, as I often say, if Dean Rock is happy to give Paul Mannion the penalties, he must be going well. So another string he's added to his bow. So, and again, like, no more than Keane or Andrew McGowan, you know, they're just humble guys, and they come back in, and there's no airs or graces about them. They just fit back in, and it's great to have him in that form at the minute. You know, as I say, one of the top guys in the country. So hopefully that continues.
Willie was saying that it feels like Mannion's sort of sacrificing some of the amazing stuff he can do, you know, for the team in Dublin, and obviously it works because they win all Ireland's. Do you think that, like he scored those couple of ones from near the sideline, you know, against Judes, and, you know, taking men on a bit more, maybe at club level, do you feel that maybe he could even do even more at county level?
I think he could. I think he's one of the stats show, he's one of the highest tacklers from a Dublin perspective and point of view. And again, I suppose at that level, that's a box Jim Gavin probably wants ticks. So he does that really well. Yeah, when he's back with us, I don't think it'll be any secret that we try to keep him up higher up the pitch if we can. Because he's so effective at what he does when he's up there, but he's got so many strings to the bow. And we leave it up to him, Conor, to be honest. If he decides he needs to go back and put a tackle in, he did it against Sylvester's in the quarter final, where his man had gone and won a kick out, and I don't know, a split second later, Mannion had taken it off his boot, having sprinted back to dispossess him. So he does it when he sees fit. But yeah, up front, that's where he does his majority of his work for us, and he's lethal at it at times. But you can see from the Dublin point of view, the way the game has gone in intercounty, he's got to do those runs and track back and find himself in those, and he's the engine to do it. So why not, I suppose?
Yeah, like, and listen, I wouldn't question really Jim Gavin, because he's won four All Irelands in a row. So
yeah. I think he knows what he's talking about at this stage. Yeah.
But I find myself just sort of getting lost and watching Paul Mannion now playing for Kilmacud Crooks.
yeah. You're looking to see, is he going to track back or what's he going to do? But, I know he's great, and as I always said to him, if he could add a right foot onto that left foot now, he'd be nearly completely unstoppable. So that's his next target.
Ah, Jesus, he's all right. He's all right as he is.
Leave him as he is.
Yeah, well, here, Robbie, thanks a million.
Not at all.
Dear, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah?
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatchet inside either. He's unfortunately for you, Willie, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself, Willie.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Well, that's neither here nor there.
Okay, Mickey Graham, you are 60 minutes from becoming the first ever Longford club to contest a Leinster Senior Football Final. There must be some buzz around the place.
Yeah, look, I suppose the parish itself and the club itself is still on a high after winning the third county final in a row, and it was a great achievement just to complete that. But yeah, I suppose after the last game against Rode, there's been great excitement and people are looking forward to the semi-final now. But we're under no illusion how tough it's going to be. You know, we're not looking any further than that game, no more than when we were in the county final. We weren't looking to Leinster at all. You just have to take it one game at a time. But yeah, there is a great buzz around the place and a lot of excitement at the moment, and everyone looking forward to the game at hand.
How big is Mullinolacta?
Yeah, it's only it's really a half parish, 10 townlands in it basically. That's it. It's a, think of a population of 350 people to 400. That's the population of it.
Jesus.
It's a half parish of Gowna, which runs into Cavan. So it's really tiny. It is the tiniest parish in Longford, and it's the smallest club in Longford. So, and probably one of the smallest clubs in the country, I'd say, you know, as it stands.
Jesus, so I was just going to ask, what's your playing population like? You know, what sort of panels are you working with?
Yeah, we're working with a panel of about 25 to 26, like, you know. So when you take that into consideration of, you know, the amount of people that live in the parish, and then, you know, and that's including men, women and kids as well. So, you know, to pull a quality team like that together is an achievement in itself,
yeah.
Like, you know.
Is everyone just involved in the club in the parish then, or how's it working?
Yeah, it is. It's a really tight-knit parish. Everybody is involved in it, basically. And, you know, if you look back over the last 3 years, it's basically the same players. We've lost nobody and we've gained nobody in those 3 years. So it's basically working off the same panel of players. And we're just lucky that we haven't picked up any injuries or any lads have had to, you know, emigrate or anything like that. Because, as I said, we're such a small community and such a small panel. So you need everybody, you know, everybody around and everybody, you know, putting the work.
Yeah, and how did you get in the job come about with them?
Yeah, I was over in Longford coaching, managing Clongish for 3 years previously to that. So then when I left them, I was actually going to take a year out, and Mullinolacta came and asked me would I get involved.
Yeah.
So that's where it started. So I suppose I would have known them from coming up against them with Clongish down through the years. So I would have known that there was, you know, potential within that group of players and within the club, you know.
Yeah, I'm still gobsmacked by those numbers you give me. So, like, do you have players playing in Dublin or what? Take it they're all still, nobody would transfer away from this club because it's so small.
No, actually, there's probably two players, you know, JJ Matthews and Kevin Mulligan, who were emigrated to New York, and they would have played inter-county football with them for about 5 or 6 years ago. So they were two lads that was lost to the club, and two big losses, considering, you know, the player pool that would be within Mullinolacta. So, you know, they were huge losses, but be able to go and do what they've done without those two players, the quality that them players had, you know, is a testament to the lads themselves that they didn't let them affect us. It, you know, losing them didn't affect the lads, and they just worked harder. And, you know, as I said, we have a lot of lads working away out, you know, in Dublin and in Drogheda, Ashbourne, and, you know, that make the effort and sacrifices to get home for training, which would be very easy for them lads just to go and play where they're living. But no, they just have such a commitment to Mullinolacta, and you know, the sacrifices they make for the team is second to none.
So they are living elsewhere in those little towns that you're talking about, Ashbourne, Drogheda, but they're still playing with Mullinolacta?
Yeah, they're still playing with Mullinolacta. Yeah, look, we have a couple of lads that are in the Guards that are based in different counties, you know, and as you know, the shift work and that, it makes it very hard to make training sessions, but them lads make the sacrifices to be there, and, you know, it's no coincidence that, you know, the rewards are showing and they're getting the rewards that they deserve.
That's amazing. And what would the support be like? I mean, again, is it a case of everybody in the parish is coming out to watch you, or what?
Yeah, no, the support is tremendous. I have to say, for such a small parish, everybody gets behind the team. It's the life and soul, you know, the GAA is the life and soul of the whole parish. And, you know, there's a great buzz, as I said, it's a great community. Everybody is behind the team. And no matter over the last number of years, you know, they'll get behind them. And even if the result doesn't go the way, they'll wait and clap the lads off the field because they appreciate all that they have done the last number of years. And they know that, you know, this is a small window of opportunity at the moment, and, you know, Mullinocht are just making the most of it and enjoying every minute of it now while they can, because they know that it's not going to last forever and these days might never come back again because of such a small population. And as I said, they're making the most of every minute of it.
And yeah, it's funny because I was just going to ask you, like, obviously you've been there now for three in a row, and I was going to ask, was Leinster something that you're thinking about all year now? You know, you won two at the start of this year, you had won two championships, now let's start thinking about Leinster. But it sounds like you can't really afford to do that.
No, we can't afford. We take nothing for granted over there, let me tell you, because we know that every day we go out, we have to perform to the best we can, because two or three lads not performing, and we know that, you know, we're going to struggle. And, you know, it's a challenge in itself just to get up for all those games. But the lads just keep finding it and keep digging out results and keep grinding out results. And they're just a testament to themselves. And the people within Mullinocht to see that the lads are giving it everything, and that's all you can ask from any team when they take the field. So while you talk about Leinster, we've been very competitive in Leinster the last number of years. We were very unlucky last year against Lomans. They beat us by a point, but, you know, going into the last 7 or 8 minutes of that game, we were finding ourselves 5 points up and we let it slip. So then Lomans went on and probably were unlucky not to win Leinster after that. So, you know, we know that we can be competitive on our day when we bring our best performances, but it's about bringing our best performances when we arrive, and that's the key, you know, and that's been the key for the last number of years.
Was it tough for you coming off the back of a county final where you won by 15 points and then you're going to play Road, who would fancy themselves in the provincial series? So you've won by 15 points, then you're playing Road, and then there's only 14 scores in that game altogether. Like, was that a tough transition?
I tell you, it probably wasn't as regards, it was our first game on the road in the Leinster Club Championship, and we knew we were coming up against an experienced team in Road who have been in numerous Leinster finals. So we knew that it was a huge game, and we knew that we'd have to go down and perform and give it everything we had, because they were such a formidable outfit. So it was a challenge for us as regards to see, you know, what this team was made of, to go down to Tullamore and try and get a result. So we were really up for that game because we wanted to know where we were at, and we also knew in the last number of years that we were a match for anybody on any given day. So, you know, it was an easy game to get up for as regards. There was no pressure on us going down there. People weren't expecting much from us. You know, everyone was talking about Road maybe getting to another Leinster final. So we went down there with no pressure, but we went down so also trying to, you know, show that we were every bit as good as them, and there was no reason why people would write us off going into that game. So that was an easy game to get motivated for, you know.
Yeah, and like, so you have Aeroge, the Carlo champions, in the semi-final. Obviously, Dublin and Laois champions are in the other semi-final. Like, are you in the mix here? Like, I know you're not going to say you're only looking at this game, but are you as confident as everybody else that you can go on and win?
Well, look, at this stage, you're in a semi-final of a provincial championship. Like, but as I said, you know, coming from my work, after coming from, you know, after it took this club 66 years to bridge the senior championship, and all of a sudden you find yourself in the Leinster Club semi-final in a matter of years. So, you know, we're under no illusion how tough this game is going to be on Sunday, and Aeroge will be looking at it the same. It's a huge opportunity for both clubs. You know, you're on the verge of a Carlo or a Longford team being in the Leinster final, and as the old cliche goes, you know, when you get to a final, it's all on the day. No matter who it is, whether it's Aeroge or Mullinocht, that they get to that Leinster final, you know, they're not going to be given much hope in that final. So, you know, they'll go in with nothing to lose in their game, either team, to whoever gets to it. So, you know, it's a huge opportunity. I know from Longford's point of view, no Longford team has ever been in a Leinster club, so just to get there would be an achievement in itself, you know, and maybe for years to come will be, you know, laid the foundation for other teams to follow suit. But, you know, it's just as far away as ever. We still have to just go out and try and perform and see what happens.
Absolutely. I mean, tell me, you got the Cavan job in August. It's been a hell of a long run into it, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah, look, I suppose you're out of the house every night of the week now, basically. But look, it's great to be in this position. And, you know, I'm delighted that the lads are still going strong in Mullinocta, plus up and running now with Cavan as well. But I have a good team around me there, and we've been able to manage things so far. We balance right, and things have been running smoothly. And, you know, hopefully that continues. But, yeah, it's been a long run into it, busy times. But look, when you're enjoying it, it makes that wee bit easier. And also, when you're winning as well, probably makes that wee bit easier as well. So look, it's only for a short time. The season's nearly coming to an end from the club point of view. So, you know, hopefully that can continue. But as I said, it's an enjoyable time, and it's a great time to be involved in football this time of year.
Yeah, now when I look at this team, I see Mickey Graham and Dermot McCabe. I'm expecting total football here now, Mickey.
Yeah. Look at, as I said, we're building blocks slowly but surely. We're taking it one step at a time, as the fella says. But yeah, look at, it's a new challenge, and it's a totally different ball game from the club scene. And you know, there's a lot more to it, as you say, a lot more expectation within Cavan. I suppose Cavan are steeped in huge tradition, and you know, they expect results to come quickly. But unfortunately, that hasn't happened the last number of years. We've only won Ulster Championship game in 5 years, so we have to be realistic of where we're at too, and we'll just look to take it game by game there, and hopefully, you know, join the league, build a team that's preparing and getting ready for Championship, and that's what it's all about.
Is there still like expectation around the county from those four Ulster under-21s? You're probably sick hearing about it, but from 2011 to 2014 you won the four Ulster under-21s, and there always was a bit of expectation that Cavan would push on then in Ulster senior. Like, is there, do you feel that now as you're the manager?
Yeah, look, there is. As I said, Cavan is a huge tradition. There's always expectation, you know, no matter what, every year Cavan expects you to be competing in Ulster finals. Unfortunately, the last one was back in 2001. I was involved myself in that one, and you know, that's 17 years ago now, and it's 21 years ago since we won it. So like, it's a long, long time, and we haven't really beaten any of the top teams in Ulster as regards to Monaghan or Donegal or Tyrone in the last 15 years, I think it is. So, you know, while the expectation is there, you know, Cavan need to be realistic as well. This is where we're at, and you know, it's not going to happen. There's no quick formula to success. We're going to just have to get the head down and work hard, as I said, and take one game at a time and hopefully build towards that. So that should be the aim, and we just have to be patient and, you know, as I said, just give us time to get our feet under the table and get working with the lads, you know, and try and build a team for not just next year, but maybe for the next 3 to 4 or 5 years moving forward.
Yeah, I read a report there that said a very few of the 74 players that won those under 21 medals in the 4 years, they, very few of them subsequently graduated into the senior squad. Where have they gone?
Yeah, look, there's a number of things, I suppose. A number of lads, when, you know, no matter in every county after under 21, a lot of lads drift away from the game and, you know, fall out of love with it. And then that, between lads emigrating and looking to go travelling, and then just other lads just aren't enjoying it. As regards the commitment for senior football now is huge. It's a full-time job nearly, because you're at it 5 to 6 times a week, and it takes up a huge part of your life, and some lads just don't have the commitment for that, because it's either all or nothing. And then also maybe the style of play that Cavan has played in the last number of years, lads weren't enjoying it and just felt that, you know, they weren't getting out of it what they wanted. So there's numerous reasons for that, but it's worrying from a Cavan point of view that we've lost so many players. And what we, even the last number of years, your panels have changed by 12 to 15 players every year. You don't seem to have a consistency of a panel that you nearly have every year to keep working on, because you're trying to build a team, and it's not going to happen within 3 or 4 months. It could take 12 to 18 months to get lads up conditioned and get them up to the standard that's required to play into county football. But unfortunately, there's been such a turnover of players, Cavan haven't been able to do that. So it's something that we'll be hoping to do moving forward, is to get a settled panel and, you know, have an open door policy. But as regards losing players, we'll be looking to hold on to lads more so than letting them go, you know.
Yeah, I saw a quote from you talking about, oh, there was, I'm talking about these under 21 teams all the time, but so many players gone. But you said that the forward line was littered with defenders in a lot of those teams. Like, so do you think that was, didn't lend itself to a long term strategy, where it was just like, let's try and win this, and probably didn't help the senior cause in the long term?
Yeah, look, I suppose at that time, Cavan, you needed to get a bit of success at underage, and they'd done what they had to do, and maybe, you know, they played a defensive brand of football. But it got some results, you know, and they got them 4 Ulster titles, and that's what it's all about. It's about, you know, the success, no matter what people say, that is there now. You can say Cavan have won 4 under-21s in a row. But did they lose, you know, players because of that? Probably lost a few forwards, because in those teams there would have been a few defenders playing as wing half or forwards or whatever, and a lot of forwards, you know, that were probably natural forwards, you know, ended up doing more work ethic, and they weren't able to play their natural game. So, you know, naturally they just drifted away from it, and they, you know, they lost confidence from it. And while it was great for the success, you know, long term wise you did lose players because of that as well. And but that's no fault to the people who was over them teams or that. It was just the way that they felt that they could get success, and it worked. So as I said, but look, it's all history now, and it's about trying to get all them lads back hopefully and get the best players in Cavan playing again.
Yeah, and like, do you think there is a bit of I don't know if ego is the right word, but like, I don't think people outside Ulster get how like traditional Cavan is and how much of a powerhouse it is in Ulster, and how, you know, people expect Cavan to play good football and win things. But then, you know, recently you had Joe Brawley calling it the Black Death of football, and does that hurt, or does that irk of people in Cavan?
It does, you know, it does hurt, and the people of Cavan, as I said, you know, they love coming to games, they love getting behind the county, and they love having something to cheer about. And you know, supporters have, you know, kind of stopped following Cavan the last number of years because maybe the style of football that was adapted the last number of years, and because it wasn't attractive. And you know, this is a results based business now, it's all about results, and some counties are happy just to get results, and it doesn't matter how you play. But you know, we'd be hoping that, you know, you can try and play a bit of attractive football, but at the same time, you know, that you're not getting exposed at the back as well. And it's about trying to get that balance and trying to get the people to see that what you're trying to do, that it mightn't work straight away, but you're trying to attempt to get the balance right. And if people, genuine people, see that, they know you're heading in the right direction, and they will come out and follow. But yeah, look, at as I said, Cavan would be up there with the likes of the Kerrys and the Mayos and Dublins when it comes to tradition and a powerhouse as regards support wise and football wise, you know.
Yeah, and tell me, do you recommend managing a club team and a county team at the same time?
Definitely not. Any man that thinks it's a great idea should go and get themselves checked out, because it is very demanding when you have a young family as well, and you're walking out every evening out the door, you know, and when they come back and they're in bed, it's tough. But as I said, look, isn't it great to be in the position that I'm in? You know, not too many people get that opportunity, and you know, it's one that I'm enjoying at the moment, because I know that it will eventually, one of them will come to, as regards the club scene, will come to an end soon. So as I said, you just have to make the most of it while we can. But look at it, it's a full, the club scene has got like that now too. It's a full time job, it's 4 nights a week now. It's getting more and more professional every year, and more clubs are, you know, really cranking up the as I said, the professionalism that's brought with it now. And teams are getting managers, trainers, nutrition, strength and conditioning coaches in. So it's really starting to move as regards in the county direction as well, the club scene, you know.
Yeah. Well, here, Mickey, thanks very much for your time, and all the best at the weekend.
Thanks very much. Appreciate that. Thank you.
I said, are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even start, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
Alright, Kieran Malloy, what is in the water down in Corrifin? By God, you're playing some stuff.
Look, we're just trying to do our best. That's all we can do, really, now, being honest.
Well, your best is very, very good, Kieran.
Look, it just seems to be going right as of now.
Yeah, what is it like? Because there is sort of this, obviously, when you win All-Irelands, people will talk about you anyway, but there's this sort of mystique, I think, building up around Corrifin, because the football you're playing is class. Like, and I remember playing against you in the sevens down in Kilmacud, and you know, it was all these bodies just streaming forward, like, and you couldn't get a hand on anyone. And I just thought, well, it's sevens, that's what they do. But it actually seems like you play that way at 15-a-side as well.
We try to implement some parts of the game of sevens, really, like when we're playing as well. Like, obviously getting the ball up there as fast as you can and not allowing the team to set is probably the best chance you're going to get to score, really, like, so.
Yeah.
Spider and getting off the pitch quickly.
And like, is there some sort of ruthless, like, are you going for goal every time? Or, like, you know, I know you're not always going to get goal, but is that sort of the first objective, go for goal, and if you can't, clip it over? Because, and I know the game the last day sort of went away from Clannagale, but, like, a lot of the points were coming handy when you were sort of in behind, I felt.
It's not really the mentality to get goal every time. Like, it's just get the ball up there and put it over the bar as quick as you can, really, like, and get back and get set and try and win the next kick out, mainly.
Yeah.
So if goals come, they come, like, you know. We're not going to force anything when we're going forward.
And what about your own brief? Like, because every time I looked up in that game at the weekend or last week, it seemed like you were bombing towards the goal line. Even if you didn't have the ball, it was like you were taking another body away from me.
There's two things really when you're going forward. It's just either you're going to help out a lad and try to get him out of trouble, or pull a lad away and make space for someone else to kick a point or get through on goal or whichever it is, like. But just to get up there and lend a hand, mainly.
Yeah, and like, I take it there's a lot of kick passing. This sounds so basic, but I take it you work a lot. People talk about Cross McGlen as a great kick passing team, especially Joe Brawley, but I mean, when I watch Cora Finn, it's as mostly textbook as you can get. It's kick, it's lay it off, you know, and it's kick again, and it's just beautiful to watch. I take it that's something that's been implemented the whole way through the club from underage.
Yeah, underage is the big thing about kicking the ball, like, you know, you don't want to, like, kicking the ball is faster than a lad running with it, like, so if you can, we're always drilled into us up through the ages, kick the ball, you know, move it as fast as you can.
So. Yeah. And how do you see this game going at the weekend with Ballintubber? Because I think they might set up a bit more defensively, so, you know, your chances might be a bit more limited. You're probably used to it from the county final, I suppose.
It's hard to know. Like, they're very experienced players and, like, very versatile players as well. Like, so they could set up or they could keep going forward or they could, like, go 15-on-15. We're not too sure yet, like. But, so, hopefully it'll be a free-flowing game of football, like, if you get me.
Have you seen much of them?
I haven't personally, no, but I don't know. I have a few lads been going to their matches. You know, when they were playing Brafe, I know a few of the lads on the team, they were going to the games and just watching it. But I don't know where they analysing anything, like, but they thought they were a good team, like.
Yeah.
You know, the very, very good, very good experienced players there, like Alan Dillon and the O'Connors.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about Dermot O'Connor. I mean, he's absolutely flying at the minute. You must have seen at least a few clips or heard a few stories about him in the last couple of months.
Yeah, he's really dictating the pace up there, like, a lot. He's getting an awful lot of ball, and, you know, we might try just mark him out of it. We don't know yet at all what we're going to be doing. But he is very, very good, like, so he's one definitely to watch.
And, like, I take it that is something, like, you'll talk about a lot, and you're not going to give me any big secrets, but like, Dermot O'Connor will be talked about at midfield. He's running riot. Like, somebody will be detailed to go on him, I take it.
I'm not too sure, being honest now, because I'm not involved too much in the midfielders. They, you know, they could be saying something different to them. I'm not sure, but, you know, I like to think, I don't want to be a man-marking job or not, but we'd definitely be keeping an eye on him.
Do you think there's an advantage for Ballintubber because it's in McHale Park?
Not really. Like, when it comes to these things, I don't believe there's home advantages a lot. Sure, they'll have a lot of fans, like, but really it's the 30 lads on the pitch and the subs that come in that it's really all down to in the end. You know?
Yeah.
Home advantage wouldn't really, in my game anyway, wouldn't really dictate the pace or dictate how the game is going to go.
And how does that favourite tag sit with you? Like, especially, you know, it's still a club team, like, as good as Cora Finn are, it's still largely a club team, like, with mostly club players, and, you know, every single game you go into, it seems like you're red hot favourites, and then, like the county final the first day out, you know, you almost get caught.
Yeah, look, the county final was a bit of a curveball thrown at us, like, you know, but we just had to adapt and try get something, and in the end we managed to pull it out of the bag to get a draw, like.
Yeah, and obviously the scenes afterwards were great. Like, I take it that Cora Finn people just live and breathe football.
Live and breathe it, yeah. The supporters are absolutely fantastic, like. They really, like, every time you'd be walking, going down to the shop or anything, or coming into training, there's always lads there watching and congratulating you and wishing you the best of luck. Like, they're absolutely brilliant, like, and even the kids coming out to you after the games and saying well done, like, you know, it's all new for me, really, like, but still, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, and the flip side of that, if you have a bad game, the same boys might say that you had a bad game.
I don't know. You've heard it once or twice, but, you know, young lads, they never lie.
And tell me this, like, do you feel like almost Corrifin players are nearly a bit of a victim of their own success, that it might be holding? Now, I know you're a young lad and, like, you were happy to be involved with the Galway team this year, but the fact that Ian Burke is the only player, like, that was starting for Galway, like, do you feel like that's holding you back a little bit, Corrifin, who are doing so well, and then you're joining the Galway camp later on?
I don't know. It's very hard to, like, you know, the camaraderie, like, you're in league, obviously, and some lads don't, maybe Ian starting, I don't know about other lads, but Ian starting there, like, you know, I felt he would have deserved, but maybe other lads wouldn't have, but he's definitely good enough. But as regards club going to a fair, it is tough trying to get into the Galway setup at all, like, and, you know, trying to give yourself the best chance of starting, like.
Yeah, because these boys, like, they probably start training in December, maybe unofficially before. Who am I to say? But, you know, when you're not joining them until March, really. So by that stage, you have almost all the league done. They've been together 4 or 5 months, training, having meetings. And then you're just sort of proving yourself again. Like especially as a new fella on the panel, like, did you find that tough?
I did, yeah, find it tough, but, like, you know, the lads in there, they're very accommodating, like, the management and the players, like, the players totally understand, and sort of the management, like, but I believe they would be trying to give you the fairest shot that they can, you know.
Yeah, and well, I suppose it proves it's a proof in the pudding with Ian Burke then, who's on to win an All-Star, like, you know, if he can be used, he will be used.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So,
and sorry, tell me this, Kieran, like, your own hopes this year, is it going to be a bit more sort of a bit more action for Galway? What is it personally now for you when you set out at the start of the year?
Well, personally, like, well, at the start of the club championship, we'd say, you know, obviously do as well as we can, try and go to Galway and try and get through Connacht or whatever, like, but we were always focusing on one game at a time. But when it comes to Galway, like, I would like to be more involved this year if I can, but you know, it is still very hard with club going as far as we did last year, like, and hopefully this year we'll go as far, and I might have another tough decision, like.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, the last time I was talking to you was a couple of months ago, and you were telling me the story of making your way from, I think it was O'Connor Park in Offaly, up to Santry in a car, eating a banana because you were going from an All-Ireland semi-final with your club to the Sigerson final with GMIT, and you got on for the second half. Like, are you worried almost with Corrifin's progress that potentially could happen again? You could have an all-or decision like that where your club and your college are clashing?
Well, NUI as well, but I would be worried, like, but it shouldn't happen, like, it shouldn't have to come to that with the fixtures, like, you know, you'd imagine they'd be able to put one game back maybe a couple of more hours or whatever, like, but, you know, it is worrying having to think I could have to make that decision again, maybe this year if we do very well with college.
Yeah, and again, you're a victim sort of your own success. Corrifin do well, NUIG do well, and, you know, you can't then play for the two of them like you would like. And as you said, like, you know, never mind the fact that they should be on different weekends or whatever, or midweek, but yeah, like, have it a couple of hours apart to give you a chance to get to the bloody game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I don't know whose fault it was, or could they have done anything about it with the fixtures, but it's all with now anyway, like, so
yeah,
hopefully it won't happen.
And like tell me physically, like, because I know mentally, like, it probably would have been not tough, like, everyone's celebrating so you're happy, but you're running off the pitch straight away as the supporters that you talk about are coming on, your head is now in Santry to get up there. But like, physically, how did you feel? Like, you know, I know you said you had a banana and probably a Lucozade, but like, you know, did you feel alright, ready to come on? Were you cold? Did you need, like, you know, how did it go when you came on?
Adrenaline took over, like,
yeah.
You know, you don't even think about it, like, you just want to, when the game was in the balance, when it was up in Dublin, like, it was very hard to even, like, it wasn't hard to come on, but after the game, I really felt fatigued then after the game, like,
yeah.
Now, don't think I'd done too much in the semi-final, really, like, but still, it was heavy ground, like, and the legs were a bit dead after the game up in Dublin, but as the journey go, as going up in the journey with all that crack, it didn't even feel my legs. It didn't even come into my mind at all.
Yeah, you were just getting updates, were you, on the game?
Not even getting updates. I just wanted to get up there. Like, I didn't even think of the score, as I said.
Yeah. And well, like, I actually was trying to think of the best way to ask you this, like, the least cliched way possible, but like, what is your sort of week round and year round routine? Like, because the way I look at it, Cora Finn finishes in March a lot of the time. Galway finish in September there. Cora Finn then start their championship again, club championship. Then it goes into provincial. The Sigerson start somewhere in between the provincial and the All Ireland. Do you know, so how do you deal with that? Obviously, you don't have any off season or, you know, downtime or a time to peak. You always just have to be on it.
Yeah, well, like, yeah, no downtime. Like, I suppose it's if you don't think about it too much, it's kind of easy just to keep them all flowing into one another. Like, but you know, you'd like a bit more downtime, but if you can't get it, you know, what can you do? You just have to keep training, and you're kind of really always fit at that stage. Like, so it doesn't bother me at all. Like, it keeps me busy. Like,
yeah, so you just like playing football.
Yeah, should really be focusing on college, like. But
well, here, Kieran, thanks very much for your time. I appreciate it.
No problem at all, Conor.
Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, 'cause
I don't want no 1 minute man. Alright, Paddy Power predictions, and as I'm on my own, I'm probably not going to give you a prediction because nobody's here to argue with me, but what I will do is I will give you a prediction of who's going to be performance of the weekend. Well, maybe the standout from each team, and then who will we be talking about on Monday as performance of the weekend. On Saturday, actually I won't do it for this game because it's the Connacht Intermediate Hurling Championship Final. Tyrone are playing Mayo. This is a bad start. Tyrone from Mayo are playing Galway's Oranmore Murray in the Intermediate Hurling Championship Final, and yeah, I'm not going to pick a Paddy Power performance of the weekend from that. But on Sunday, we have the Connacht Club Football Final. Ballintubber against Cora Finn is in McHale Park at 2 p.m. It's also on TG Cahard Live at 2 p.m. My guess is going to be, not just because he was on the show, but I think Kieran Molloy will end up being the standout player from that. He's a wing back, he's absolutely flying, gets forward, and I think if Ballintubber set up a little bit more defensively, then the wing back's going to be crucial, and he's somebody who can definitely unlock them from a different way, I suppose. The Leinster Club semi-finals, Mona Yachta against Era Og of Carlow in Pierce Park. I'm going to go with Rian Brady in that because he is absolutely flying for them as well. He scored 1-3 in the final. He missed a couple of goal chances as well. Good against Road, very sharp player. I think he's going to stand out in that game. Kilmacud Crokes against Port Leash, Parnell Park at 2 p.m. Paul Mannion, obviously. Munster Club Senior Football Championship Final, Milltown Malbay of Clare against Dr. Crokes of Kerry. It's in the Gaelic Grounds. That's on TG Cahir as well, but it's deferred coverage. First game at 2 p.m. This game, which starts at 1:30 p.m, is the deferred coverage on TV. Tony Brosnan and the Munster Club Intermediate Football Championship Final is also on at 1:30 p.m. in Mallow, Fermoy, Kilcommon. Kilcommon against Fermoy, Cork against Kerry. Surprise, surprise, I'm not going to give you a Paddy Power performance of the weekend for that either. But thanks for tuning in. Thanks to the interviewers, and we'll see you next Monday. And Wooly will be back. You'll be glad to hear.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.